Golden Tower of the Fisher Building in Detroit's News Center. This is the University of Toledo's Irrelevant University.
I'm your host, Larry Burns, Vice President for External Affairs at the University of Toledo. Tonight, we'll explore how advances in education, in particular with technology, are preparing today's learners to be tomorrow's leaders. We're joined by Dr. Penny Poplin-Gazzetti, Dean of the Judith Herb College of Education at the University of Toledo, who will be discussing technology as a tool to enhance learning. Kyle Smitley, a UT Law School alum, talks about founding the New Detroit Achievement Academy, which is a charter school right in Detroit. Christopher Edwards, an Apple Distinguished Educator at the University of Cincinnati, shares how they use technology in the College of Nursing. And Kevin Hogan, editorial director of Tech and Learning magazine, will provide a national perspective on trends in educational technology. And it's all coming up next right here on the University of Toledo's The Relevant University, here on the great voice of the Great Lakes, News Talk 760 WJR. Dr. Penny Poplin-Cassetti is the Dean of the Judith Herb College of Education at the University of Toledo. Penny has been with the university since 1994 and has led the Education College for the past year. Recently, she and her colleagues have worked to create a new strategic plan for the college that increases the focus on experiential learning and technologies that will advance learning of the students. So, Penny, welcome to the Relevant University.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you back, and it's a pleasure working with you throughout the year, so thanks. Now, tell us about this strategic plan at the University of Toledo. You are one of the first colleges that are coming out with a new strategic plan, and what do you want to tell our listeners about the College of Education at UT and its future?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm really excited about the directions that the strategic plan will take the college into, and particularly the distinctiveness that it will provide us. And I want to tap into what you just said about the focus on experiential learning, and I think that's a big piece of it. You know, the university in general is focusing on experiential learning, and what that means is the opportunity for students to practically apply their content that they learn in the classroom. We know that's what employers are looking for. And colleges of education have always had student teaching as a requirement. We're no exception to that. And that generally occurs, however, in the junior and senior year. What our plan calls for is for experiences that begin during their first year of college and then continue to graduation. And
so right off the bat.
Yep. I want to share one of those with you. We have one of our faculty members, Susan Parks, and just a delight, very excited about the work that she does. She actually takes her classroom into the school. She teaches it in a school where students work one-to-one with the K-12 students on literacy development. So this is in addition to any student teaching they do in their junior and senior year. So these kinds of experience where students can actually get in and start working with kids, whether that be observing, whether that be tutoring, whether that be what Susan Parks does with her classes, this is the kind of thing we want to see more and more of. So we believe our plan will ensure that students now are going to be better prepared teachers who can really help create the most effective learning environments through these kinds of experiences.
Absolutely. And we're talking with Dr. Penny Poplin-Cassetti, who's the Dean of the Judith Herb College of Education at the University of Toledo. And Penny, how does technology fit into that scenario as well? When I visit high schools now, I'm amazed at some of the technologies that high schools have. So it would lead me to believe that our students need to be up on the latest technology. So can you talk a little bit about technology as it relates to the experience?
Absolutely. A couple of areas. First of all, one of the things I want to talk about is this notion of individualized education. We've known always that students, no matter whether they're adults, kids, or whatever, we know that they do best when teaching takes into account their pace of learning. And what technology allows us to do is to create learning environments that account for those differences in ways that we couldn't do a long time ago because, you know, we've only got one person. Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of time to go from student to student. So, example, we have a couple of faculty members, Nancy Staub and Judy Lambert, and they are developing things like online modules that will allow students to work at their own pace in developing prescribed competencies, while the other one is developing game-type applications that will allow students to apply content to problem-solving, like doing a game. You know, you might choose one solution that will take you in one direction, or you could choose a solution that might take you another direction. Both of them are giving you feedback on an individualized basis. So we're starting to incorporate these kinds of technologies. So on the one hand, we're teaching students using this, but we're also teaching them how to use those in a classroom. So it's not only providing individualized education for our students, it's teaching them how to provide individualized education for the students that they're going to go out and be teaching.
Well, and that is so different than when I went to high school, you know, 45 years ago. And now one of the real popular phrases that we hear on television and in reading is the flipped classroom concept.
Yep.
And I think our listeners would like to know what a person like you means with the flipped classroom concept.
I can speak for the College of Education. We have several faculty who are using this as a technique. The notion of a flipped classroom is when you request that your students actually read and research the course content outside of class. Now, we all know we were asked to read things when we were students and come to class ready to listen to a lecture.
Right, so we do the reading at home.
Yeah, but we don't lecture anymore.
Right,
okay?
Right.
We ask them, again, faculty that we have like Victoria Stewart, Christine Fox, ask them to read and research and then come to class ready to solve problems and work on projects. So this allows the instructor to actually provide feedback on application of content. Again, we'll get back to that real-life experience. Rather than lecturing again on something somebody supposedly already read, but if they knew you were going to talk about it, why did they have to read it? This is reading it, becoming familiar with it, so you can actually use it in a classroom. So our college is actually embracing this concept quite a bit, and it's actually a concept that has been used for a while. And again, technology is allowing us to think about how we use that in a different way.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we're very excited about also at UT is creating a one-world schoolhouse.
Yeah.
Dr. Scarborough, as you know, our provost, has been very excited about this. And what does that mean as it relates to the College of Education and future teachers?
Well, one aspect of the One World Schoolhouse, particularly that we've been talking about, is the notion of simulation technology and innovation labs. The simulation technology is actually very exciting. We are working with the University of Central Florida that has a program called Teach Live, and that's where there's actually actors in Florida who are streamed to us as avatars, and the students can practice responses to things like classroom behavior issues or how to convey difficult content, all in a safe environment. So they can make a mistake, and they're not hurting anybody,
right,
and they can be critiqued without risk. Wow. So that's one notion of the One World Schoolhouse. Another is the notion of the emerging technology and the learning innovations and some of the things that I talked about, development of simulations and different kinds of modules will be amplified in this area. And what we can do is, as a college, is provide advice and consult on what kinds of innovations might be most useful in K-12 education. And so our faculty become sort of consultants. And also then we can actually have labs where students come in and try these out. We assess it, we critique it, and make it more potentially marketable,
right,
but certainly more usable for when we talk about K-12 innovations.
Wow, this is exciting.
It's
certainly not the College of Education that many of our listeners might remember back in the day. And that's a good thing.
That's a very good thing.
And with your leadership, with the faculty that you mentioned in the interview and others, you know, UT is really the place to be for future teachers.
Absolutely.
And we're very excited about it. I want to thank you for all you're doing to make UT the relevant university and for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Dr. Penny Popham-Cazzetti, Dean of the University of Toledo's Judith Herb College of Education. And coming up next, a UT graduate creates a unique charter school to serve students in the poorest area of Detroit. When the University of Toledo's The Relevant University continues, here on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, News Talk 760 WJR. A University of Toledo alum has opened an innovative charter school in one of the poorest areas of Detroit. Kyle Smitley, who received her law degree from UT in 2011, started the Detroit Achievement Academy in 2013. In addition to a rigorous curriculum, Kyle School is unique in its dedication to healthy, locally grown food and community involvement. The school just opened last year and is already making headlines, including being featured on the famous Ellen DeGeneres show. So, Kyle, welcome to the Relevant University.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And we're very, very proud of you at UT.
Thanks.
We had you on our previous show, Environmentally Sound, and you continue to amaze us. So keep up the good work.
Will do.
So you're a young entrepreneur with a successful eco-friendly clothing company, children's clothing company. You had that. That's what we talked about last time. So what made you decide to leave that life to create the Detroit Achievement Academy?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's kind of an abrupt shift, right, if you don't know the context behind it. But essentially, my company, our big goal was to give over half of our profits away to great nonprofits. One of those nonprofits happens to be a charter school in Chicago, who then invited me to come visit. And it was amazing. These students were bright, and they were charming, and they were clever, and they loved learning. And I was really surprised to find out that most of them were in extreme poverty. Some were homeless. And I remember just thinking, like, wow, this education is so powerful, because these kids were more lovely than I was even in college, and more articulate and things like that. So, you know, I said, you know what, I'm gonna find the Detroit equivalent of that school, the Detroit version, and get involved somehow, donate money to that school. And I think what I learned was that there isn't one, and knew I had to do something.
Well, and why Detroit?
Detroit is just incredible. I grew up about an hour and a half outside Detroit. I'm the only child of a father who loves Detroit baseball.
Good.
And so I definitely spent my summers as a kid at Old Tiger Stadium, you know, which is just square across the street from Michigan Central, which to me, you know, now and then was just the most beautiful thing I had ever seen as a small town kid. So just really fell in love with the architecture here when I was little, the people, the culture, the history, and you really can't beat it. So I think as I traveled, what really struck me was that everything else was just sort of a more boring version of Detroit. So I knew I needed to come back here.
Well, that's great. As a native Detroiter, I feel the same way. And with things like Shinola Watches and some of the really cool restaurants opening up in the heart of the city, I think the best days of Detroit are ahead of us.
Yeah.
And now tell us more about your school, the Detroit Achievement Academy. You know, who are your students? What is different about the academy, and things that you want our listeners to know about?
Yeah, there's a lot that makes us really different. You know, one of the biggest things that makes us different is that even as a charter school, we have really accomplished, incredible teachers. And so when we hired our principal, her name is Sharon Yaker Ressler, and she's really incredible. Her first words to me were, you know, people and books. Like, that's where I want to spend our money, like high quality literature for our students and really incredible teachers. So we have, you know, a Harvard grad with 7 years of experience. We recruited just this incredible, her results with data are just outrageous, teacher from Chicago. So just hired these incredible teachers, which is how you get results for kids. Mm-hmm. In a lot of charter schools, you'll see, you know, first-year teachers in classes of 30, while at our school, you'll see classes of 15, which, you know, is where we're getting our results. Another thing, as you mentioned, that makes us really unique is that we feed our students 3 meals a day, none of which have any processed sugar, and are as fresh and local as we can find. So just good, healthy food, and we teach them about it. I think the last thing that really is different is our perspective on enriching our students and families. So our students get an hour of art instruction every day, which is pretty rare, and we really feel that we are a part of the support system for our parents. And so we do things like have parent events where we give them tips on how to help their kids with math homework and our discipline system at the school and things like that, just to really integrate us into sort of the fabric of each family and in our community as a whole.
And we're talking with Kyle Smitley, who is the founder of the Detroit Achievement Academy and a University of Toledo law school graduate. And so the age groups of the kids, ranges?
Yeah, they're 5 and 6, and they all live just right around our school.
So they're little youngsters that you're trying to create a much better future for.
Yep.
So now, the experience on being on the Ellen DeGeneres show, how was that?
That was incredible. I mean, we were actually featured on the show twice in the last 3 months. The most recent time being just last week. It's incredible. It's really mind-blowing. She found out about our school once we had a break-in. We lost all of our computers. We sent out sort of a frantic email to our friends and family saying, oh my gosh, can you guys donate? Can you give us a couple computers to borrow? We have to assess our kids. During this window, we just lost all of our computers. And so then later she invited me to be on the show and presented us with a really great check. I mean, it was definitely life-changing for our school.
And she presented some donations to help you replace the computers?
Yeah, to replace the computers, but I think essentially to just help us shove forward on our mission. You know, hiring accomplished teachers is really expensive, and providing this private school quality education as a free public school is really expensive. And so her donations just went directly for payroll, went directly to just fund an excellent education.
And so you're an entrepreneur, and how do you see, what's your vision of Detroit Achievement Academy as you look out 1, 2, maybe 5 years out?
Yeah, it's so exciting to think about. I mean, already we have most of our kids on grade level. That's halfway through the year. We look at Detroit average, which is 4% on grade level. We'll graduate our kids with 100% on grade level, which I believe will make us the highest performing school in the city within our first year, which I used to say that was my 5-year plan, but I think, you know, my 5-year plan is, we'll be in a new facility. We will only be able to fit in our current sort of dirty wing of a church, which we love, for another 2 years. So 5 years, we'll be in a new facility. We will have even more students because we accept a new batch of kindergartners every year. We'll have about 150 students, and we will be a reason for Detroit to be celebrated nationally, I think. I think what I would like is for people to look at Detroit and say, you know, they're on the rebound, and also one of the, you know, nationally best schools in the country also happens to be there. So I would love that. I think that's my goal.
Great. Those are great goals. Now, what if people are listening, driving home, or listening in their kitchen? What can they do to either help or find out more information or just be supportive?
Oh, my gosh. There are so many ways. So we very gladly accept all donations in any shape, size, form.
So it could be books or...
It's online on our website, DetroitAchievement.org/donate. There are ways to just donate online, but then also links to wish lists that our students and our teachers have put together themselves. So our kindergarten class just put on a book about ants that they would like to read as they learn how to write persuasive letters. So things like that you'll find on our wish list, which a lot of people really like sending because they just meet very clear, specific needs for our kids. We also love volunteers. On our website, you can contact us, and if you want to come spend some time and do some math work or some literacy work with our kids, we'd love to have people.
Great. Well, I am going to make sure that people at UT know exactly what you're doing and that word gets out that how they can help. So
thanks.
So hopefully our listeners will do the same. And I want to thank you again for what you're doing to trying to make the place in Detroit and around the world a better place.
I appreciate it.
So, and we'll keep in touch and have you back on the Relevant University if that's okay.
Yeah, I'd love that.
All righty. Thanks, Kyle.
All right. Thanks, Larry.
Yep, thank you. That was Detroit Achievement Academy founder Kyle Smitley. And coming up next, nursing students at the University of Cincinnati learn with the help of an iPad mini. We'll hear about the school's iPad Institute when the University of Toledo's The Relevant University continues. Here on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, News Talk 760 WJR. Chris Edwards is the Assistant Dean for Information Technology and Communications for the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing. As an Apple Distinguished Educator, Chris leads the school's iPad Institute that puts an iPad mini in the hands of each nursing student to use in the classroom and on clinical rotations. The college embraced the technology a few years ago, and it was fully implemented with students this fall. So, Chris, welcome to the Relevant University.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And I have my iPad with me today, my iPhone. So tell our listeners about the iPad Institute and how at the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing this is being embraced.
Sure. Well, we started this journey about 3 years ago with the very first iPad Institute. It's a group of about 20 faculty members. And the focus of that institute was really just an iPad in the hands of the faculty member. And it was a year-long professional development workshop that was a partnership between faculty, instructional design, and information technology in the college. And we really challenged faculty members to take the iPad and explore how it would change the way they would interact with students, the content, the physical space, how would they conduct assessment and provide feedback, and then just as their role as a faculty member. And so we provided them 4 days of training around the use of the iPad, asked them to develop plans about how they would implement the iPad in their classrooms, and then it would culminate with a community presentation. And while that was happening, we began to really get our infrastructure ready for the iPad. So we did a lot of classroom infrastructure updates. We also did some work around management of the iPads on the network and getting the wireless network ready for a really high concentration of devices. And then we also started to explore what the iPad would look like in the skills and simulation lab and how we could extend the use from the classroom into that environment. The iPad Institute 1.0 was very successful. The iPad was well embraced. There were some really exciting outcomes. And that really laid the foundation for Institutes 2.0 and 3.0. And in Institute 2.0, that's when we really decided that there was value in the iPad in the hands of the student. And so when we made that decision, the tone of the conversation changed a little bit. And we really committed ourselves to using the iPad comprehensively across the curriculum. And so we did things like encouraged e-textbooks that helped students develop the standard around that. We redesigned all the lecture content that was typically in a PowerPoint format into an iBooks format. We delivered content through the iTunes U platform. We gave them nursing reference materials, things that were in physical textbook form the year prior. Now we're in e-format, so students had these wherever they went. We began to work with faculty to develop app-based assignments so that the iPad was part of the assignment itself. And we purchased, along with one of our textbooks, a simulated electronic health record, which really did a lot to tie together the classroom, skills and simulation, and then eventually the clinical site. Kind of, it was the common theme running throughout.
We're talking with Chris Edwards, an Apple Distinguished Educator at the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing. And I'm fascinated by this. One reason is because the University of Toledo is embracing Apple and the things that you're mentioning. But actually tomorrow, I don't know if you're familiar with Mary Fricker.
I am.
She's coming to train some of us in our department. And
yeah.
So I'm excited, but I'm a little afraid that maybe I'm not going to be the quickest learner. So how did the faculty adjust to this sort of new way of preparing everything?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that foundationally at the college, we approach professional development for faculty. It's kind of a three-pronged approach. And so we provide professional development, which is what you're getting ready to experience with Marianne. And then we follow that up with partnership. So we see professional development as, we'll show you how. Partnership is, you do it, but we'll be there to help. And then we try very hard to create community around the integration and the use and application of the technology. And so it really is a process that matures over time and does require that partnership and community to really be effective.
Sure, and we're looking forward to it tomorrow. I'm going to teach a class next fall in interpersonal communications. Actually, in nursing students are going to take it and using this technology. So
that's exciting.
Hopefully I'll work it out. Now, you also use Apple TV in the classrooms, and you mentioned iBook, authors, software for lectures. And how have these changes added to the technology transformation of your school?
Well, the iPad and the supporting ecosystem really opens up a world of possibilities for the classroom. And so these are two great examples. The Apple TV allows you to wirelessly project your iPad screen onto a projector or television. And so we've equipped all of our classrooms with Apple TVs. And so as an instructor, what this does is it does two things, really. It allows you to be untethered from the lectern, so you can move around the room freely and deliver your content. Which really does change the dynamic of the way you interact with the space and with the students. But it also allows you to have these spontaneous collaborations where you can ask students to put their iPad on the screen. And, you know, for example, you might have lectured for a few minutes and say, you know, we've been talking for the last 10 minutes about a particular topic. Now let's stop and see what you thought was important and have a debrief about that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe break the students into small groups and say, do research on a particular topic, and then we're going to come back together and share what you found. And the cool thing with the Apple TV is that it opens up these kind of active learning opportunities in spaces that would be not impossible, but difficult to do in the past. So these lecture halls that have tiered seating, mm-hmm. you now can begin to do really robust active learning, and you don't have to, and you can do it spontaneously, which is really powerful. Now, the iBooks author and the iBooks platform that allows you to create multi-touch books, we made a decision that we wanted to leverage the iPad in every way possible and take advantage of its capabilities. And so what we did is, with a partnership between our instructional design team and faculty, they redesigned all their PowerPoint lectures into a multi-touch book format. And that really allowed us to do two things. One is create engaging lecture notes for the students. It drives us towards flipping the classroom eventually. So as these books mature and become more interactive and the content in them gets a little more robust, it will allow us to deliver lecture content outside the classroom. And then the lecture time really then becomes more case-focused and discussion-focused and active learning-focused. And then the second thing is the iBooks format, in conjunction with iTunes U as a delivery mechanism, mm-hmm. really gives the students some pretty powerful learning tools. And so they can take notes, they can highlight, they can add notes alongside those highlights, and then they can take those notes and, with just a few touches of the screen, make flashcards out of their notes. And then working alongside iBooks, working alongside iTunes U, all the notes from the course, whether it's on a video or a book, they all roll up and they're organized for the student in a really nice fashion so they can study more efficiently. So those are just a couple examples wow. of how the iPads really changed the classroom.
Yeah, for absolutely. And Apple, I think, if not the most strongest brand name of a company, is certainly in the top couple. And to be an Apple Distinguished Educator, what does that mean? What exactly does that mean to when you introduce yourself as an Apple Distinguished Educator?
Yeah. Well, first, let me say I'm honored to be selected to be part of this group. It's made up of some very talented and creative and innovative people. Every 2 years, Apple accepts applications for the Apple Distinguished Educator Program. I think Apple's really looking for people who are using their products in innovative ways. But I think more than that, they're really looking for people or organizations that are using their products to really transform education. And so I think in part it's about recognizing that work. But really, the ADE program, the Apple Distinguished Educator Program, is really more, I think, about creating community amongst those innovators. And so that gives us this opportunity to have this lifelong professional learning network with people who are doing similar work in different disciplines and different grade levels, from K-12 all the way through higher education. And so it's just an invaluable resource to be able to communicate with and bounce ideas.
Yeah, and at the University of Toledo, we're very excited. That's how I met you, through that relationship. And
So
you're doing great things at the University of Cincinnati. We'd like to keep in touch and see how you're doing, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely.
And appreciate it very much. And best of luck to you as the Apple Distinguished Educator process continues.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that was Chris Edwards, an Apple Distinguished Educator at the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing. Coming up next, we'll learn how educators across the country are embracing new technologies in their classrooms, from the editor of Tech and Learning, when the University of Toledo's The Relevant University continues, here on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, News Talk 760 WJR. For more than 30 years, Tech and Learning magazine has helped the K-12 education community with resources and strategies to integrate the latest technologies. The magazine has nearly 100,000 monthly subscribers, and through online content, newsletters, webinars, and events, Tech and Learning reaches more than 1 million education innovators. The magazine follows the latest trends in ideas and tools for education technology and for leaders, and also tests some of the latest technologies that are out there. And Kevin Hogan is here tonight, and he has served as the editorial director for the magazine since 2008. So, Kevin, welcome to The Relevant University.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it very much. Now, we've come a long way from a teacher lecturing in front of a chalkboard and standing there with the overhead projector, which was from my day. Can you summarize some of the most important ways technology is now enhancing education in the classroom?
Yeah, absolutely. I think far and away, the biggest change, the biggest enhancement that the technology has brought to students and to teachers is really the access to the Internet. And really, if you, I don't want to get too over the top with this, but really, since Gutenberg, have you had the ability for people to get access to the Library of Congress at the tips of their fingers, or you know, the multitude of information sources out there? So it's changed for the better the way that students learn in the classroom.
And this whole show tonight is dedicated to technology, and we've had some people who are Apple Distinguished Educators. We had our dean of the College of Education at UT, and one of the things we talked about is with the increase of smartphones and tablets like iPads for personal use, how hard is it for schools to try to stay up to date with technologies that their students use at home and socially?
That's always been a real challenge for school districts. I mean, the way the magazine kind of looks at the technology, usually you see it's a district that is looking to adopt a particular technology, be it a hardware or software. And that usually involves the Board of Education, and it involves the faculty. And by the time the district gets around to actually adopting and implementing a technology, there's probably a newer version or two versions along the way. So that, historically, that is one of the reasons why education has kind of lagged behind what most of us see in our daily lives with the use of technology. Now, what we've been noticing are some innovative districts around the country that are adopting something that is known as BYOD, or bring your own device. So where in the past districts would say, okay, put your smartphones away and turn them off, or else they'll be confiscated and sent to the principal's office.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're encouraging the students to leave them on and to use them in the course of their day-to-day schooling. And if done properly, with the right policies, with the right professional development for teachers to really see these devices as a tool, that can help a lot when it comes to districts trying to keep pace with technology. Now there is something else called the digital divide, where you look at districts where students may not be able to afford that technology, and that is another conversation altogether.
Yeah, we're talking with Kevin Hogan, who is the editorial director from Tech and Learning magazine, and I find that what you talked about of leaving the personal devices on fascinating. It has to require a teacher in the classroom that has the confidence to handle that dynamic environment, and I think it gets back to making sure that places like UT are preparing you new teachers to do that. So when they go into a high school or a middle school, they have the confidence in their technology background to try to let the students keep things on.
Absolutely. And one interesting thing we found is now is a generation of teachers who have grown up using some of these technologies does not necessarily make them powerful as a tool in their job. So while they might have their own Facebook page or LinkedIn page and use these sort of sites and tools, they don't think about it as an education tool, where we have found many who do, and they use it to their great advantage.
Yeah. Now, can you give some examples of particularly innovative ways some teachers have embraced technology? And I think the one of leaving phones on and that is brilliant. Are there any other examples of what some people are doing that our listeners would find interesting?
Yeah, one strategy that we've been tracking for a couple years now is something called flipping the classroom, to where teachers, instead of giving the lecture during classroom time and then sending the students home to do their homework by themselves and then coming back to listen to more lecture, now what they're doing is actually taping their lectures, putting them up online on YouTube, having the students listen to the lectures while they're at home for their homework, and when they come up with questions and opinions on what they've listened to at home, that becomes a conversation that happens in the classroom and helps enhance kind of project-based learning. So that's one real kind of innovative way that we found teachers using the technology to kind of change the way they teach.
And using that classroom time in more interactive, experiential learning type ways, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's something that we're learning a lot about at UT. And the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, because this, I remember back in high school, I went to a Catholic boys' school, and at freshman year, you were put into a section 1 through 15, or 11 through 15, based on their assessment of you.
Yeah.
And you lived that way for 4 years. In many ways, it impacted what people thought of your learning ability and what you thought of your learning ability. And I never felt it really was the best way. So I know the cover story of Tech and Learning this month is about technology used for required assessments. And can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure, and that's a huge conversation that is occurring in the education technology space right now, because you combine the efforts of the Common Core curriculum along with certain concerns over student privacy and the use of data and the tracking of students as they go through classroom. There is a certain amount of a worry that digital assessment is kind of a boogeyman. Mm-hmm. And those are all certainly valid concerns, but when it comes to the pure technology aspects of it, we've seen districts be able to use assessment at a digital level to their great advantage, to where you can actually track students individually without, as you mentioned, kind of calling them into Group D or Group E,
right,
or putting them into various groups that will identify them. You really just follow each individual student's progress, and as they start to veer off in one direction, you can see that in terms of the use of formative assessment as the school year goes along and guide a student back onto his or her particular path. So when you take away the politics and the issues surrounding it, from a pure technology level, there's some great advantages to that sort of assessment.
Absolutely, and we all learn differently, and I think this allows us to, and teachers and students, to determine the best way that they can learn versus trying to bunch everyone together. So I know you're getting ready for the Tech Forum next month in Atlanta. What is the thing that you think is going to excite you the most?
Well, it's really exciting for the editors to be able to go to these events, because they are really kind of in-person experiences that reflect what we write about both online and in the magazine. So we get to see our readers and we get to see our advisors and really sit back and listen to the issues that they're dealing with, which is what drives what we write about in the magazine. So what I'm most excited for is to hear what's happening and what's next that I don't know now.
Yeah, so you'll be able to write about it, and we can have you back on the show if you'd be so kind.
I'd love to.
All right, well, thanks, Kevin. Enjoy the good weather in Atlanta. Hopefully all their snow is over as well, so appreciate it very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, that was Kevin Hogan, editorial director for Tech and Learning magazine. Thank you for joining us on The Relevant University. I'm your host, Larry Burns, vice president for external affairs at the University of Toledo. The University of Toledo is proud to sponsor this program. And for more information on The Relevant University, simply visit us at utoledo.edu/The Relevant University. Or follow us on Twitter at The Relevant U or at Larry Burns. And join us next time at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, March 25th, for more discussion on the role of colleges and universities in their communities. It's right here on the University of Toledo's The Relevant University. And the great voice of the Great Lakes, News Talk 760 WJR.